So I was sitting over here during part of that True North video, which True North is a great program. Help them out. But I was sitting and I was just watching this bee pollinate these yellow flowers that are just, I don't even know if they're flowers or weeds, but I couldn't stop watching it. My eyes were fixated on this little bee doing what it was created to do. And I was absolutely filled with awe at something I know I've seen 100 times before. There's something about living with the ability to pay attention to what's happening around us and in us. Because I'm living with this growing sense that that we're losing our ability as human beings to pay attention, particularly to God. Now, I don't want to sound like an old codger or the kids these days. You know, I don't want to ever be that guy, but I just wonder if we are going to start experiencing some unintended consequences. A moment ago, one of the lyrics to the songs spoke something about addiction. And a lot of us may say, I don't really have any addiction. And I think my challenge to that would be is to walk into any airport or any waiting room or any restaurant and just look for a minute, because what you'll see is this. Because I do it a lot. I look, I notice. I've begun this practice. I don't know if it's my way of sticking it to the man, but I just refuse to pull out my phone when I'm waiting for something. When I go to a waiting room, when I'm in an airport, I don't. I also went completely analog. I don't. I only read paper books now. I write in paper journals. I even moved from preaching from an iPad to paper notes, because I just think that my device was getting the better of me. I would also maybe make the argument that in some ways, even as followers of Christ, myself being guilty, that there are moments when I'm building on the wrong foundation. And so I'm going to share a story, and it's not in my notes, it's just a little bit of grace here. I'm just winging it for a minute. I was, again, as I was watching the bee, I was kind of wrestling with where this whole thing was going to go, because I'm not interested in simply just transferring information to you. If you need information, just read a book, right? But I was sitting and I was reminded of two events that happened to me. The first was in 2006. I was living in Colorado and I'd had a crisis, a ministry crisis. My wife and I were done. Some things had happened in our church and I just couldn't take it anymore, and so we were gonna leave ministry. But then Northbrook, the church I pastor now, called, and it's a long story. And Northbrook and I kind of saved each other. But then the second crisis happened in 2016, so just a few years ago. We were experiencing some good things at our church at Northbrook, and we were experiencing some growth, and so it was decided amongst our leadership that we were going to expand our facilities because we were outgrowing them. So we entered into this huge $8.2 million project, which seemed unattainable, but we did it. And that next year, so 2015, 2016, like many churches that build a building, we experienced some significant growth, so much so that Northbrook found itself on Outreach Magazine's 100 fastest growing churches in the country. And I was feeling good about myself. I'm like, man, I've arrived. And so I had my 1 minute of notoriety, and then the next year, the growth slowed, and I was so frustrated. I'm like, why aren't we growing? What do we need to do? What's the next program? And I'll never forget, I was driving down Hillside Road in Richfield, Wisconsin, in my car, leaving the office, frustrated because I'd looked at the attendance report, and it wasn't what I wanted. And as I'm driving, and I in that moment, I heard God as clear as I've ever heard him. And I listen, people that constantly say, God told me, if that makes me nervous, but that's a different sermon. So, but in this moment, I'm driving in my car and I heard as clear as day, the reason that you're frustrated is because you worship the numbers and they've become your God. I had to pull the car over. It was this moment of reckoning for me. It was in that moment that things began to change for me. And I realized my life had become a lot like, you ever go to pull out your Christmas lights and they're in this big ball and you've got to just untangle them all. Even if, it seems even if I put my Christmas lights away properly, when something happens over the summer where they, I don't know if it's a gremlin or my children or what, but I pull them out and they're in a ball and I've got to spend all this time untangling them. So in that year 2016, I entered in this period where I'm trying to untangle my life and really discover what's actually important. And what I found was what's actually important was the foundation upon which I was building my life upon, because the foundation is everything. I was listening to a podcast a couple of months ago, and I wrote down some notes. I didn't write down what the podcast was, which was dumb, but I didn't. But I wrote down these notes because the speaker was talking about a survey that was done, and I like statistics and numbers and surveys, and so I was listening to this guy talk about a survey that was conducted of X number of Americans, and the question they asked were, do you consider yourself a Christian? And 67% of the participants responded, yes, I'm a Christian, which is actually down from what America used to be, but it's still a reasonable number, 67%, yes, I'm a Christian. But then the second question that was asked in this survey was, do you actually live your life centered on the words of Jesus from the Bible? And the number in the same survey went from 67% to 4%, which is a startling number, really. But when I open up the scripture, when I open up the text of the Bible and hear the words of Christ, the real words of Christ, not the way we interpret it or what we think it means, but when we hear the words, it's good, but it's hard. It goes against my nature, my sinful nature. My wife and I have been married 27 years, and we both often forget our anniversary, both of us, because I mean, I tell her every day with me is like an anniversary, but over the course of our marriage, we have purchased three homes. Two of them were in Colorado, where we lived for 10 years, and one of them was here. And all three of them have been new builds, just because the way it worked out, it was better economically to buy these new homes or have a home built. And as we built these homes, the exciting thing about building a new house is you get to pick everything. You get to pick the flooring, you get to pick the colors, you get to pick the countertops, the cabinets. And it's exciting to watch it go up, but we never got real excited about watching the foundation being poured. I mean, of course we want the foundation to be poured correctly, but we weren't showing up every day to watch the foundation go in. Now, when the wood started going up, you know, you see the rooms take place, that's exciting. But we never got excited about the foundation, and yet the foundation is probably the most important part of the home, because the foundation is what stabilizes and brings structural integrity to the building. So this morning, the text we're going to read from Matthew chapter 7 is Jesus speaking about the structural integrity of our life. And in this passage, Jesus is going to use the metaphor of building a home to speak about our own inner integrity and stability. Because I think if we're honest, we all want stability in our life. Oh, I know there are some that are adventurous out there. Maybe you live out of your van and you think that's cool. It's great. You be you, man. I read a book of a guy that chronicled his journey of riding a 10-speed bicycle from Northern California to Patagonia, Argentina. It took him a couple of years. He brought a backpack and a hammock and would just pull over on the side of the road at night and hang his hammock and sleep. And that's just not me at all, because I want stability, and that feels very unstable. I mean, if someone were to describe me or you as unstable, that's not really a good thing. Like, nobody wants to be labeled as unstable. And yet stability is not cool. Nobody makes a New Year's resolution saying, man, I hope this year I'm just stable. What is it that makes us feel stable anyway? Because quite frankly, when I had my moment in the car on the side of the road, I felt very unstable in that moment. I love to sit in my den in my house and watch it rain or snow. I'm actually fairly introverted. And I like to sit in my den. I've got a reclining chair. I love my dog at my feet. I've got a three-year-old golden doodle named Arlo who sits there with me, and I just love it. It could be pouring or blizzard, and I can just sit there and watch it, and I feel stable. But I might feel different if I was in a tent. Why? Because the nature of the structure. So what is it that makes us feel stable? What gives stability to our life? I mean, is it our relationships, our marriage? Do we need those things to be well in order to feel stable? Is it our career? Do we need to continually be advancing in order to feel stable? Or is it a dollar amount in an account somewhere, a savings account, a 401k or a Roth IRA? Is that what brings stability? Or is it going to our annual physical and getting the A-OK from our doctor? Good, we're stable for another year. Is that what causes stability? You know, all of those things are temporal. And all of those things can change it at any moment. In today's passage, Jesus is going to speak about stability in a different way. He's going to use more eternal language. Because see, our outward stability in life will always begin with our inner integrity. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus is going to conclude the Sermon on the Mount by offering three short parables. And in each parable, he's increasing the intensity of his teaching. Jesus, in these three parables, becomes a bit more challenging and a little more confrontational. And in these three parables, he's going to contrast those who are truly his followers and those who are not. So he begins in verse 13 by saying, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter it are many, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." Then Jesus moves from talking about gates to trees and fruit. In verse 17, we hear Jesus say, "So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit." A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree produce or bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. Then in the final four verses of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus again switches the metaphor to construction work. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. If you build on the wrong foundation or look for stability in the wrong place, there will eventually be a collapse. I may have minimized my emotional reaction to the story I told a moment ago about God speaking to me in the car about my obsession with numbers. But in that moment on the side of the road, there was a collapse. And I realized I was building everything on the wrong foundation. I mean, the working metaphor that Jesus uses here is spend some time digging a good foundation. Now keep in mind, Jesus is speaking in Israel, a land that's topography is very different than our own. In Israel, sand is everywhere. Much of the soil is sandy, and even though the sand could become compacted and feel stable, it wasn't. And so the metaphor that Jesus is working with is even if you build your house on sand that seems stable in the moment, if you don't dig down deep into the bedrock, when the storms come and the floods happen, then your house is going to be completely washed away. So if you want to build a good foundation, you've got to dig down. And the topography of the nation of Israel at times required some to dig down as far as 10 feet to hit the bedrock, which is a lot of work. I mean, keep in mind, this is first century Galilee. There's no backhoes. It's a guy with a shovel digging 10 feet to find the bedrock. And so that's the metaphor Jesus is using for his hearers to understand what he's talking about. And in his process, Jesus offers two very simple steps, really. It begins with this. He says, whoever hears these words of mine. Now, Jesus, as he uses that phrase, is speaking the language of discipleship. Hear these words of mine were the phrases of the rabbi, wanting their students to not only listen, but listen to understand, listen to grasp, listen to pay attention. If you were a disciple of a rabbi, it was expected that you would give their words your undivided attention, that you would ask good questions, and that you would think deeply after the teaching session was over. I would argue we're all disciples of someone or something, every one of us. So who's our teacher? Who are we listening to? Who has our undivided attention? And are we, and I don't say this judgmentally, but I say it compassionately, are we creating space in our life to think deeply about life, about faith, or are we always rushed and always hurried? The cardiologist Meyer Friedman coined a phrase, hurried sickness, which he uses as a diagnosis. He describes hurried sickness as the persistent sense of urgency, chronic rushing, and anxiousness. He developed this terminology because he had cardiac patients coming to him with symptoms in which he could not come to a diagnostic conclusion about because their heart seemed healthy. But this persistent sense of urgency and rushing and anxiousness were causing physical symptoms. To which I would also argue we bring that into our own spirituality, and there's this sense of a rushed spirituality because we're trying to check off boxes and do the right things. But I wonder, is it actually possible to have a deep spiritual life if I am constantly rushing to the next thing? I mean, what are we rushing towards? The good life? I mean, what is the good life? What is the American dream? In pursuit of this ideal, I wonder, are we chasing the very thing that's actually destabilizing our soul? Hear these words of mine and put them into practice. Whoever puts these words of mine into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. The builder took time to dig deep. Now, this teaching would have made complete sense to those hearing it. There were a lot of changing weather patterns in the area of the Sea of Galilee where this sermon was given because of the topography, the ravines, and the Sea of Galilee sitting so low and the surrounding mountains would cause storms to rise up unexpectedly, which would lead to floods. And in a very dry climate, flooding was common, and flooding could, in fact, bring down a house if it were not built on something stable. And so the wise, those that had good judgment and common sense, understood these things. In the terminology of rock, all good Jews knew that the rock was the image of security that Israel had in God if they followed his way. And so as we bring this working metaphor into today, into 2014, listen, the weather and the atmosphere in life is constantly changing. I never know what tomorrow will bring. And so what Jesus does seem to be saying is our outward stability begins with inner integrity, and inner integrity happens when I hear his words as a disciple. Not just read his words off a page, but hear his words as a disciple and become one of the 4% that actually put his words into practice. As a pastor, I often have a conversation with congregants, with individuals that say something to me like this, and maybe you've said it. Pastor Mike, I just want to go deep in my faith. And whenever I have that conversation, I always nudge and I say, what does that mean to you? You want to go deep, what does that mean to you? And usually, through some conversation, what that means is, typically, I want to be intellectually stimulated. Which is good. I like the intellect. I like to think. I like to read. But I think intellectual stimulation is a very small part of what it means to go deep in faith. Because I think the bigger part of going deep in our faith is when we can sit and wonder at a bee taking pollen from a flower and say there must be a God. When I can wake up in the morning and drive as the sun begins to rise and experience the holiness of who God actually is. When I can open the scriptures and not just read them, but so absorb them in such a way. I mean, have you ever read the Bible and there just seemed to be a passage that leapt off the page as if it had life in it? I mean, there's something about that that's profound. I've gone snorkeling a couple times in my life. One time, my family went on a cruise, and I think we were in St. Thomas. I think it was St. Thomas. And we were taken out to this place to snorkel called Christmas Cove. And we got in this pontoon boat, and we went out. And it's beautiful. I mean, that part of the world is beautiful. Palm trees, the ocean clear. And everything was beautiful. The driver of the pontoon boat, I mean, is the driver, is that a captain? I don't know. If you have a pontoon boat, are you a captain? I don't. But the captain took us out to the spot and dropped anchor, and then the rest was up to us. We had to put the equipment on and jump in. And when I jumped into the water, what was beneath the surface made what was above the surface seem insignificant. It was beautiful. The colors, the mesmerizing formations of the fish. I saw a sea turtle. It was so cool. But see, the captain of the boat could only take me so far. In order to experience the depth of the ocean, I had to jump in for myself. And so I would say to my church, and I would say to you that there comes a point, and please hear what I'm about to say with the heart that I mean it by. If you get to a point and you would describe yourself as a maturing Christian, and you say, man, I'm just not growing in my faith. I'm just not growing in my faith. And usually that's code word for I think I need to change churches. I have a lot of friends who are pastors. I'm just not growing in my faith. And if someone would describe themselves as a maturing Christian, then I would look you in the eye and say, that's your fault. Because the captain of the boat can only take you so far. A pastor, wherever your church, even if your pastor is the most amazing theologian and shepherd that's ever lived, your pastor can only take you so far. There comes a point in which you have to jump in for yourself. It's what the Apostle Paul meant. Listen, you should be on solid food by now, but you're still needing milk. Why? Because you've not learned to tend to your soul for yourself. See, the failure to take the words of Jesus seriously are on me for me. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. I mean, back to the building metaphor, not taking time to dig past the sand to the bedrock could be catastrophic, but some did it because it was easier. But sand is so unstable. Years ago, my wife and I were, my wife's from Colorado, by the way, I keep bringing up Colorado, that's where she grew up. And so we lived there for 10 years, and one of my kind of bucket list things while I lived in Colorado was to hike Pikes Peak up and down in camp. And so a couple of my friends and I decided to hike Pikes Peak. It's a 26-mile round trip, and we brought tents and food, and so we had these huge packs, and we did it, and it was hard, but it was good. I was also 30 years younger and 25 pounds lighter, but we did it, and it was a hard hike, but the trail was solid. It was rock. It was very stable. And so though the incline was difficult, the hike wasn't, it was a fairly decent hike because of the stability of the path. I contrast that with another experience I had in Michigan. In Michigan, along the lake, there is a park called Sleeping Bear Dunes. Maybe you've been to Sleeping Bear Dunes. They're these sand dunes that rise about 500 feet off the lake, and Sleeping Bear Dunes are tons of fun to run down. But coming up is a very different story. Coming up Sleeping Bear Dunes is so hard because you sink into the sand. And I would argue that if I were in really good shape, I would rather hike Pikes Peak than constantly climb up Sleeping Bear Dunes because it is so exhausting to try and climb up the sand. So what's under our feet? Is it sand or is it something a bit more stable? Maybe you say, yeah, Pastor Mike, I know I really want to work on my spiritual life, but I just can't seem to find the time. That's the language of sand building. If it's important, I will find a way. If it's not, I will find an excuse. And honestly, advances in technology, for as much as I just poo-pooed it, have given us more free time than any period in living history. Like, I can go home on Friday, and within an hour, I can buy all my groceries online, have them delivered to my door, I can buy my clothing, pay all my bills, and do all of it in less than an hour, something that would have previously taken generations all day to do. But I just keep filling it with more. You see, our beliefs actually shape our practices, because you and I, we have assumed beliefs and we have real beliefs. Our assumed beliefs are what I think I believe about life, but our real beliefs are those that are demonstrated in behavior. So if I have a friend and they say to me, I'm a vegetarian, I think eating animals is wrong and cruel, and I only eat vegetables or tofu, which is nasty. But if I were to walk into a restaurant and see you eating a steak, I would not believe that you really believed you were a vegetarian. If I don't put the words of Jesus into practice when things are good, when the weather shifts, things are bound to collapse and the weather will always shift. Jesus, in fact, promised that the weather would shift. In John chapter 16, he said, in this world you will have trouble. Have you ever said, why is this happening to me? Or why would God let this happen? I've said it. Why would God let this happen? I can't believe God would let this happen. To which I want to say, it's terrible, but he promised it would happen. In this world you're going to have trouble. But here's the good news. I have overcome all of it. I have overcome the world. See, those people that seem to live with joy in all circumstances have discovered that the way that we live outwardly is actually a public artifact of the inner life. And so Jesus here in this passage as he concludes this sermon is talking about the foundation and stability of your life. And for those following him, a well-built foundation is actually rather simple. Hear the words of mine and put them into practice. Oh, it's simple, all right, but so hard. At times, seemingly impossible to live these words. So I wonder what it would look like, not only today and the rest of this week, but in your daily life, to create some sacred, unrushed space each day in which I can truly hear the words of Jesus. Whether it's from the scriptures or from sitting and watching a bee take pollen from a flower to looking up into the night sky and seeing the stars and hearing the words of Psalm 91 that the heavens declare the glory of God. Because if it's important, I'm going to find a way. And if it's not, I'll always find an excuse. My prayer, oh God, for us all, really, is that we can stop buying the lie that there is not enough time. Oh, it's so much easier and less time-consuming to build on sand that seems okay in the moment. But when things start to shift, everything seems to collapse and we're shocked. We just don't know why. Would you give us the courage and the energy and the resilience to dig past the surface and find the rock? And though it may be inconvenient, often uncomfortable, and more time-consuming than we could ever have imagined, the stability that we will experience from building on the rock is so much better than trying to build something on the sand. So would you help us all? Would you help me to hear your words, not just listen, not just read words on a page, but truly hear your words, like a disciple would hear the words of a teacher, like a disciple would hang on every word of their teacher because they so desperately wanted to be like him. Give us that kind of hearing. And then give us the courage to practice even those things that don't make sense, even when you challenge us to love our enemy. Because in loving our enemy, we're building on the rock.